to our podcast update number 5.
Work has begun on Canada's information highway. That's the state-of-the-art network that we're told will change everything from the way we do business to the way we learn. As it comes more and more into our personal lives, how are we going to cope with the techno peasants? I mean, this world, which was a fantasy for me 10 years ago, every 6 months becomes more a part of my own real life. You know, in the place where I do most of my writing, I now am just hooked into the world electronically,
right,
or would be if I could figure out how to make the bleep bleep modem work. But I'm technologically over my head already. The limit on me is not what you can do, it's what I can do.
I'm not sure you want to use your bleep bleep modem, or any modem for that matter, with receiving podcasts. But, you know, just check out our website and I'm sure you'll figure it out.
For more information, visit citr.ca/podcast. Thank you for listening and please be kind to robots.
Hi there, you're listening to CITR 101.9, and I've just started my show. This is Besneric Rhyme. My name's Linda, and for those of you who've heard the show before, it's a poetry show. Basically, every week I take one poem by a local poet, and the poet and I do the activity in the poem, and we talk about the poem, we talk about the activity. This week I'm actually going to re-air an older show. This is an interview that I did back earlier in the year with Ben Hart, who is a local poet who has a sonnet cycle about donuts. So, I think I'm just going to jump right in and we'll get on with it. All right, thanks for listening.
Duffin's Donuts is at Main and 33rd, and it also advertises hot tortoise subs on the sign above its door. The parking lot is full of vans and delivery trucks, and one baby blue Fairmont with a sticker of Niagara Falls on the bumper. Hispanic and Vietnamese blue-collar workers sit at picnic tables outside, smoking, drinking coffee, and eating donuts. When we walked in, a few stopped to ask us what we were doing, and I said that we were there to talk about donuts.
Talk about donuts?
Yeah.
Oh, donuts. This guy's a professional, man.
Oh, yeah? Have you been coming here a long time?
Every day, almost.
Really, hey? What kind
every
of donut
day.
Do you prefer?
I forgot the name, but every one of it. Duffy's Donut has been famous.
Once we get inside, it's clear that whoever told Ben that Duffin's Donuts is the best in town hasn't lied, at least about the plethora of choices. There's a huge case confronting us with every flavor of donut that you can imagine.
Look at the maple ice rings. Look at home cut. They have chocolate peanut, honeydew, chocolate coconut, apple spice, buttermilk, chocolate iced ring, rainbow ice ring, angel donut. You can buy smokes at this place.
Wow.
What kind of donut do you want, Linda?
I'm really stuck between the honeydew and the angel, you know?
Go angel. It's the right move. Yeah. And can I get the brown old-fashioned one? The one with the chocolate? Maple, yeah, that sounds delicious. This coffee cup's got lipstick on it, see?
It's not a real lipstick mark. It's fabricated into the porcelain, I guess to give you the feeling that you're sitting in a real gritty coffee shop from the movies. We go and sit down in one of the plastic booths, which has a 1 hour sitting time, as a sign on the wall tells us, as well as that there is no discount for coffee refills. There's also a cactus.
I'm about to take my first bite of this delicious looking maple old fashioned donut. So here it goes. I got so excited about that one that I blew a snot bubble. I'm pretty happy. I'm gonna follow it up with a little coffee.
Well, Ben had opted for the maple old fashioned, a tried and true choice. In the end, I had gone for the angel donut, the donut of mystery, if you will.
I have the angel donut. I'm not really sure what's angelic about the donut to date. It appears to be a fairly standard closed donut, if that's perhaps the term. It doesn't have a hole in the middle. I'm assuming that means it's got creamy stuff in it somewhere. You know what? I'm going to just, like, rip right into it and see what the hell's going on.
All right.
One, two, three. I don't even think I can...
Get in there. Oh, it's huge. I know why it's called angel donut now.
What?
When you take a bite like that, you get the like powdered sugar, and it looks like wings coming out of your mouth. All right, now a description of what's inside there.
Yummy, sort of goopy chocolate kind of mousse. It's really good. It's like a Eclair filling or something. It's not custard. It's like a cream-based kind of squishy thing.
Squishy things being as they may, we weren't there purely to talk about donuts. We were also there to talk about poems about donuts. We went back outside, where the Vietnamese man had spoken to us earlier, in the hopes of finding someone who'd be willing to read aloud one of Ben's poems. The first man we encountered said that, although he was a master painter, he had never learned to read. We chit-chatted for a while, and then he'd brought something out of his wallet to show us. It turned out to be a certificate from the chief of police of Vancouver, thanking him for his work painting public buildings during the visit of Prince Philip. He had studied gymnastics when he was young, he said, and he was the fastest painter in town. Although Mike, the Greek painter, couldn't oblige us, in the end we did find a couple people who were willing to read Ben's poems. This poem is a group effort. A man named Eugene started it off, and a woman named Janet finished it.
Oh, what style! Never out of fashion. The same in Rome as red beer. Stretch it out all you like, over distance, over time. This Taurus holds its space.
Least enticing behind the counter, plain maybe, sprinkled, Spartan with cinnamon, but persistent. The notion that with age comes perfection, that recipes pass on the genes, the way history works, topologically, deforming the past but never changing its properties. How we connect to it through a donut, frying lard, beaten eggs, a cup of milk, old hands kneading this lump, white with flour, donut rolled perfect and then spun.
We left Duffin's Donuts and got back in the car, heading north to see what other donut emporiums Vancouver might have to offer. We ended up at the public market on Granville Island in search of Lee's Donuts, which Ben told me had been 27 years in the same location. Even so, it took us a while to find it.
We're walking past bins and bins of beautiful looking fruit, and like here we have some colorful pasta, some roasted garlic and cheddar ravioli is on sale, maple syrup, and this is the sausage cart, some rookwurst and blood sausage, pancetta, Swiss salami. I think that we missed, no wait, where's the donuts? The donuts are over here. I think I see it. All right, we're just pulling up to Lee's Donuts. Looks like they have some delicious seasonal things.
I would love to get a cruller.
Yes, please.
I'm going to have the honeydew.
Does it shape?
Taste like melon?
No.
No? What's the taste?
It's a white cake donut with honey glaze on the outside.
Why is it called honeydew as opposed to the honey dip? Can you explain the difference?
Well, they are both the same, similar donut. Just one's a cake donut, one's a yeast raise. They both have the same sugar on top, the honey glaze.
What's the difference between a cake donut and a yeast raise donut?
Cake donuts are a batter that you mix in a big mixing bowl and then drop them into the fryer. Yeast raise donuts are rolled out and hand cut. They're fried in the same fryers, but there's just a different process of making donuts.
We had been hoping to get a counterperson to read Ben's poems when we were up at Duffy's, but unfortunately there they were all too shy. The Lee's Donuts lady, however, kindly obliged us with Ben's poem, Cruller.
Curler, oh so cruel, the sweetness, how it corrupts everything, the milk, the butter, the eggs going soft, your sugar coat sliding off, the mess on my hands when you melt and you melt at room temperature. Leave patterns on wax paper, these stains, they're like the clouds. I can find things like them right here. A hat. I see it, but it can't think of anything other than a donut dressed up slippery in leather. A doughy dominatrix whose skin once broken reveals real cruelty, a curler that cruelly curler than any other. Inside, you are nothing but empty, airy, and hollow. That's
awesome. Thank you so much. Yay!
Crullers in hand, we went outside to sit on the bench by the water. If you listen closely, you can hear the sound of seagulls flapping and squawking as we discuss the donut's relationship with the sonnet form.
This cruller tastes like a sweet egg. It's absolutely spectacular.
I feel like the egginess is the main attraction of the cruller.
I do think that. The lure of the cruller is the sweet egginess. The airiness. It feels like you're eating sweet air and egg.
So, what makes the donut a poetic subject? For you.
For me, because where I grew up in a small town in eastern Ontario, and donuts, as much as it's sort of cliched, it's like they were such a part of our culture, you know? Like, what we did on a Saturday night was go to the donut store and order a donut and sit in the smoking room and drink coffee until 4 in the morning, and then we'd go home, you know? It was kind of like our activity. Like Elmer, like Johnstown, Ontario is... pretty much, it, you know, and you don't want to say anywhere town, Eastern Canada, but it's kind of what happens. It's a shared experience. And I think that for that reason, donuts are important to people. Even, and like, you know, not just in a basic, you know, basic way. Donuts are entirely, they're not nutritious. They're not good for you. They've become cultural in Canada and particularly where I grew up. So that's why donuts for me are poetic.
Why did you choose the sonnet as the poetic form that you would use to discuss your deep cultural feelings about donuts?
I kind of felt like I wanted to mix, this is going to sound really corny, I wanted to mix high and low art. How can you talk about something as sort of banal as a donut and have it come off? How do you make poetry about donuts, you know? I mean, like I said, donuts are kind of poetic to me, but they're not poetic to everyone. And I think that, like, using a form like sonnet is, one way to do it, and I think it's hilarious, that mix of high and low art, you know, that's sort of the most accessible thing in the world, and then something like a form that a lot of people view as being sort of inaccessible or like formal and old-fashioned. I don't know. It felt like a tweaking on the form, and it felt like the only way that I could write poems about donuts was to give myself a set of rules.
Do you want to actually take one of your sonnets and lead me through and show me the sonnet devices and the things about it that make it a sonnet?
Let's look at a sonnet that I'm working on right now called Donut Hole, which hopefully will be number 13 in my box of donut poems.
And why 13?
It's a baker's dozen. You know. And donut holes aren't real donuts, they're donut holes. And they're, you know, they don't take up as much space and they're little, small gifts. And that's kind of the first line of the poem is about that. I'll read it and then we'll talk about the line. It's, oh, hole, you small gift, carved out heart, I love what you leave behind. Such a perfect place for tongues, such suggestion, baked good, filled up with cream, sugar-coated, honey-dipped. So those are the first four lines of the poem, and they're kind of like a good example. Each of the lines has 10 syllables in it. There's 14 lines in a sonnet, so each of the 14 lines has 10 syllables, oh hole being 2 syllables, you know. And the poem is also broken down into an octet and a sextet. That's the first 8 lines sort of follow one train of thought, and then there's something called a volta. A volta is a turn in the poem where, like, the content changes and becomes, generally it becomes a little bit more philosophical, or, like, the point of the poem is made. There's a turn from the more descriptive to the more abstract even sometimes. Like, it's about ideas, and there's a turn in the tone of poems at that point, in sonnets generally, and there's also a turn in the rhyme scheme. I don't have rhyme in my sonnets yet about donuts. It's coming. Hopefully, but I'll read the volta here. I'll read you from where I stopped to the end, and we'll talk about the volta. Frosted some impossible flavor, glazed over, and still I'll know you better for what you're not. Whole, don't get me wrong. Don't take me big-eyed, ungrateful. I'm not that impressed by size. I never have been one to reach for more than I can carry. And no, it's not your absence I'm after, not the donut I'm craving. It's you, whole. You're the one I want to be like, that bite, once taken, that leaves something so unwhole. So that's the last 10 lines of the poem. The volta comes at Let me count here. It starts with sort of in the eighth line, I'm not that impressed by size. It becomes about, there's sort of the volta comes after not, I mean physically. But at that point, the poem turns from being sort of descriptive of the donut hole, and it starts talking about more abstract ideas, like the idea about wanting to be like a donut hole, you know, to like align oneself with one, with that punched out heart, you know?
Yeah, because there's sort of a bunch of traditions behind the sonnet. There's sort of, or the conventional view of sonnets is that they're usually love poems, right? Usually addressed to a beloved. Then there's the stream John Donne, the metaphysical sonnets, the ones that sort of take a religious view sometimes or engage with a sort of spiritual subject. And then there's the stream of meditative sonnets, like Keats's. Do you feel like these are love poems? Do you feel like they're meditation poems? Is there a specific tradition with which you'd align yourself?
I think that I'm going to try to factor in all of those different lines. I think my poem about the donut hole is very much a love poem. There's a lot of longing in it, and I think these poems are, you know, certainly donuts are acting as symbols for different things. The crueler poem is about, you know, relationships and how sometimes they go sour. It's certainly not just about a donut, and there's a line in my Boston Cream sonnet that says a donut never just that, in reference to this group of poems. It's never just about a donut. There's the love poem about the donut hole. There's the more like historical poem about Boston creams. There's one that I'm working on that's sort of supposed to be about mathematical ideas, and that's the old-fashioned poem. So it's certainly not limiting myself to love poem or to a philosophical handling of something. It's how donuts can extend all over that territory.
Do you want to talk about the topology idea? Maybe not necessarily to read me the poem, but you could maybe read me the lines about the topology. You definitely, like, it's sort of a research-based poem, and a poem that engages ideas that we people who eat donuts don't usually think about them as mathematical entities. When I looked up some of the stuff in your poems, they definitely, the donut seems to be almost a learning tool for people who want to talk about shape, because it has this really distinctive shape. So maybe you can just talk about topology and the donut.
Yeah, well, I'm afraid I have a very Wikipedic notion of topology. It's certainly, these poems have, through research, become bigger than I thought they were going to be, and topology is one of the really interesting things. It's this notion that you can spread out a lump or a shape, and no matter how far you pull it, it will maintain its core properties, and donuts are a perfect example of that. If something is spun, then what will form is something called a torus, which is the shape of a donut, and it just spreads out further and further, but it never loses its properties. It's like core, I'm sort of playing it like core identity, you know, like the what it is, and I think that that's sort of where the poem goes more abstract than maybe mathematics would allow, but I'm sort of playing at the notion, especially in this poem that's called Old Fashioned, it's about how the telling of something changes it, but the thing itself never really changes, you know, there's like this core thing, and Old Fashioned donuts are supposed to be this, our old sense of the donut. The donut as like historical figure almost, you know? This is the past, you know? And we keep returning to it, and we keep redoing it in a little bit different ways, but I don't know. I'm treating it sort of like how history changes too. The more we talk about it, the more it changes, but there's still the core, like something happened, you know?
This something that happened next was the one I'm sure you've all been waiting for. No donut tour of Vancouver or of anywhere in Canada could really be complete without a trip to Tim Hortons.
So now we are in the Tim Hortons at the corner of Balaclava and Broadway in Vancouver, and we are about to get us some delicious donuts. What are you thinking, Linda?
Gosh, I don't know. Maybe at this point in the day I can only handle a donut whole. Would that be a total cop-out?
Oh, yeah, I think so. You know, we are on a donut tour of Vancouver.
You know what I'm thinking? I feel like there are actually more other things being sold here than donuts. There are bagels and muffins, triple chocolate, blueberry bran. There are cinnamon raisin buns down there. We've got some croissants. There are cookies, all kinds of cookies. And then the donut selection actually seems like smaller.
It is small, isn't it? Maybe we should ask one of the employees about this.
We did ask one of the employees, and her explanation was that it was late in the day, so a lot of the best donuts were already gone. We weren't sure we totally bought this. In comparison to the display case at Duffin's Donuts, the Tim Hortons one looked awfully sad, a little bit paltry. They did have honey dip, but I'm not so sure they had honey dew. We made our selections and sat down by the window.
What do you think, Linda? Donut number 3 in the morning. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling okay. I'm getting the marathon feeling. I'm kind of like, you can do it. The end is in sight. Look, you've got the pumpkin glazed donuts.
You're almost there, and it does look special, doesn't it?
It does. I'm just sort of breaking into it, and this is some seriously soft and gushy donut. I'm wondering if it's got some kind of sour cream base. So let's try a little bit. Spicy. Would you like to tell us about the Boston Cream Donut and how it specifically to you relates to the past?
I was one of those kids who would go into a donut store and look for the thing that was the most gluttonous, the big one. And this was in a time when the donut store in Prescott, Ontario, where I ate most of my donuts in my youth, didn't have Long Johns or Bear Claws. I mean, and Boston Cream was as nasty as you could get. And they were huge, if I remember correctly. They were probably about the size of my 8-year-old head and stuffed oozing with the custard. And I would order, you know, one of them and slowly make my way through it over hours and hours, put it in the fridge overnight, eat it the next day. It was one of those things that lasted so well. And I have fond memories of that. And having just taken a bite of this one that's surprisingly small, sort of fist-sized, and I'm yet to get to the cream, and I'm sort of halfway through the donut, so I'm feeling a bit strange about it, you know? But you always remember things a little bit better than they really were. Isn't that the truth?
How do you feel like Tim Hortons compares with the other donut emporiums that we have visited? And what do you feel like the sort of... How much do you feel like Tim Hortons and the donut are inextricable in your mind? When I was looking up donuts on the internet to prepare for this interview, I was reading about the donut, and of course the Wikipedia is an American site, and they had this whole little quote about how you punch out the donut, and then you have the bit in the middle, which is called the donut hole. And it took me a full few seconds to realize that they meant Timbits, you know? And I had never really thought of them as donut holes. I don't think I ever called them anything but Timbits.
It's almost too bad, isn't it? The way that one brand has taken over, it's like the Frisbee. It's actually called a flying disc. And I think that, to a large degree, donuts in Canada are inextricably related to Tim Hortons, which is unfortunately owned by an American company, but I believe it was bought by the same company that owns Wendy's. The fact that it starts off with the hockey player's name, you know, sort of embeds it in Canadiana. And then there was this major sweep of Tim Hortons through Eastern Ontario, anyway, in the sort of early 90s, where every small town that had a stoplight got a Tim Hortons.
Wakefield doesn't have one.
Where was that?
Wakefield, the town that I'm from, actually still does not have a Tim Hortons.
You see, it's a holdout, although I think Tim Hortons in Quebec, you know, I think that it's not as prevalent, but there's a few in Montreal. I can remember stopping in for a cruller here and there. But it was in the sort of mid-90s when, like, they saturated every small town in Ontario, anyway, with the Tim Hortons, that it became just such a regular part of daily life to go to Tim Hortons. And we had a donut store before called Mr. Muggs, which was quite a good donut store. You know, it was like exactly as it should be. There was no smoking room. It was a whole smoking place. So it was cigarettes and coffee and donuts, and all the like sort of local vices were available across the street from the strip club, you know. But then Tim Hortons came in, and it just, you know, it became the only place to go. And I think that things are different in urban centers, of course, where there are other options. And I think, you know, Duffin's Donuts is probably a way more interesting place to go. But I still feel like coming to Tim Hortons is a little bit of a coming home, you know. They're all made to look about the same. So this could be Prescott, Ontario. And this Boston Cream probably tastes exactly the same as the ones there, you know. So it's a bit of the Starbucks effect, maybe. Make you feel comfortable even when you're far away from home.
You know what? I'm actually going to take this moment to read you some Tim Hortons facts. According to Wikipedia, Tim Hortons franchises, which was founded in Hamilton, Ontario, are plentiful in Canadian cities and towns. As of October 5th, 2006, there were 2,638 outlets in Canada, 305 in the United States, and currently, and this is a new one that was set up in June, I believe, of this year, so a few months ago, we have one outlet in Kandahar, Afghanistan. Tim Hortons has supplanted McDonald's as Canada's largest food service operator. Apparently, Tim Hortons accounts for 22.6% of all fast food industry revenues in Canada as of last year. And since you mentioned Starbucks, Tim Hortons holds 62% of the Canadian coffee market, compared with Starbucks, which is the number two, at a astoundingly much smaller 7%.
Well marketed, huh?
Somewhere else I was reading that actually Canadians have the highest consumption of donuts per capita in the world. We are the number one donut eaters.
I say represent to that.
Thank you.
I can't sleep at night. I can't eat a bite. Cause the gal I love, she don't treat me right. Oh, baby, you make me feel so blue. I don't know what to do. Sometimes I sit inside and then begin to cry. Cause the gal that I love, he said her last goodbye. There's a change in the ocean, change in the deep blue sea. I tell you now, there ain't no change in me. Somehow my love for that girl will always be. I can read her letters, but I sure can't read her mind. Yeah, she said she loved me, but she was lying all the time. Well, now I know my poor love was blind. Now I got the crazy blues since my baby went away. I ain't got time to lose. I must find her today. I'm gonna do like a madman, get some heart, get myself a gun and shoot myself a couple of my love. It's been with you. Now I got the crazy blues. Went down to the railroad, put my head on the track.
You've been listening to Besnerek Rhyme on 101.9 FM, and that was the Great Donut Tour of Vancouver with local poet Ben Hart. He's currently the fiction editor of Prism, and you can find his work in such journals as the Malahat Review. A little announcement of an upcoming reading. We have Stephen Price coming to town, who's going to be doing a reading at Robson Square. It's on Thursday, April 19th at 7 p.m. So you should go out for that. His first book, which is the one he'll be reading from, which is called Anatomy of Keys, has recently been nominated for the Gerald Lampert Award, which is an award for a best first book in Canada. So you should come out for that. And next up is our movie show, Reel to Reel. Thanks for listening. This is CITR 101.9.
Gonna do like a madman, get some heart, get myself a gun and shoot myself a couple of my love. It's been with you. Now we got the crazy blues. Well, the doctor's gonna do all he can, but what he's gonna need is an arm to take a man, cause my love, it's been reviewed. Now we got the crazy blues. Oh, loud, he proud of the that door. Oh, loud, he did a lot of the food that I do. But it's a dead thing that I do. Moon that is that I do.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Reel at the Movies. Robert Waldman back in action. Lots of new films to talk about today. First up, a hilarious comedy called Blades of Glory. Thanks to some wicked judges, two